I wouldn't say it's quality content, but it's innovative and it's like entertaining to watch him wake up. Or like the bits that keep getting clipped are him seeing, like waking up in the middle of the night, looking at his screen and seeing that it's now gone up by 3 hours, even though he's had 4 or 5 hours passed since he went to bed. Welcome back to the Gaming Careers Podcast. I'm here once again, as always, joined by my co-host, Benjamin Green. Ben, how has your week been?
Good, man. We had a time change this morning, and that was fun to find out that we were only 4 hours behind you guys instead of 5 for the recording, but otherwise pretty good. How are you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm very well. Thank you, mate. Yeah. So you've had your daylight savings time kick in, and I think ours in the UK kicks in a couple of weeks' time. So we'll be back in sync in just a couple of weeks. But yeah, it was an interesting discovery this week that we had to record an hour different from my time zone anyway. But yeah, all good. We've got plenty to talk about this week. As always, Twitch has leaked some info about a potential brand safety score, which has caught a lot of Twitter's attention. So we'll definitely dive into that. We've also had the Glimish launch, and sort of Glimish has done a post-mortem on how they think the launch has gone. So we'll dive into that a bit. There was an interesting podcast that included a few streamers on YouTube, and they're talking about some of their complaints about YouTube as a streaming platform, which I found super interesting, as well as our usual look at the Twitch subreddit and viewer questions and things like that. So I think probably makes sense to dive straight into the brand safety score, since that's probably the biggest news this week. So why don't you describe that to the audience, and let's hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, that sounds good. So this came out over the last week, where someone found in the API on Twitch, there's a new flag, or maybe it was there for a bit, but they just found it, of brand safety, which takes into a couple accounts like your partnership status and your auto mod settings and whether you've had any ban history, stuff like that, and basically adds tags to your account. And this has not been officially rolled out yet, so there's still some speculation as to whether it'll come and what it'll look like. But the idea is, Twitch will be assigning a brand safety score to your channel based on your history of bans and theoretically how safe you are for brands to advertise on your channel. And this got really mixed feedback, I think, from people, depending on the perception of what this means. Some people are saying that, you know, Twitch is going to mark you as someone who's not advertiser friendly and you won't get ads anymore. In reality, I think this is looking more like it's going to be introducing ad targeting, which they kind of mentioned towards the end of the API info there, is that hopefully this will give you more specific info on Twitch because we don't have ad targeting yet. So advertisers can kind of choose demographics and different types of viewers that they want to market to, which would be pretty big in my opinion. But overall, there's a lot of, I think, gut backlash to this whole idea. Did you see any of that, Pete?
Yeah, I think probably the reason so many people were backlashing against this was because there was a couple of like choice phrases that were written into this API. So some things that would be stored on your account included a rating. I'll read out verbatim: a rating of this streamer performed by a Twitch affiliated reviewer. So effectively you'd have like some kind of rating, whether that's a number between 1 and 10, or if it's like some kind of like text saying what kind of streamer you are. But people were taken back by the fact that there would be staff employed at Twitch who would be reviewing streamers and writing some code into their profile, which would basically describe what kind of rating they would have. So I saw a lot of backlash about that, and rightly so. But like you said, this to me is 100% just due to ads and brand safety and making sure that you can match ad providers with the right streamer. But I can see how people sort of took this the wrong way. It's good. It's good for the platform. Like all platforms will do this on some scale. YouTube has like loads of different safety guidelines on what kind of content you're producing and things like that. And they even have like a YouTube partner preferred. I can't remember the exact name of it, but like the cream of the crop ads go to these like, I don't know, 1,000 or 10,000 creators who are pulling in massive views. And I remember there was big talk about when Logan Paul had the Suicide Forest video and he got pulled from this like premium YouTube ads where the CPM is crazy high and it's like really the cream of the crop on YouTube where they're pushing. So YouTube has this. It's not surprising that Twitch is implementing this. But because of the backlash, it looks like Twitch has now like responded, basically saying that they're removing this code from their API. It hadn't been introduced yet anyway. It was just sort of found by somebody that was interested in the API anyway. So that they kind of made it a bit unclear as to what they're going to be doing here and whether they're still going to be implementing it.
Yeah, I think they probably still will implement it if I had to guess. And it just kind of leaked early, like you said. And I agree that looking at other platforms like YouTube, ad targeting is so important. And I think it could be a really big win, actually, if this is done correctly. And I'd like to see more information added to the API, not just like ban history, but also if they can get some sort of demographics on viewer age and different things like that. Because right now, the Twitch ad revenue for people is kind of a joke in terms of everything that I've seen. Seems like no one's really making most of the revenue on ads unless you're a top, you know, 0.1% streamer and you can just press the print money button in that case. But for most people, I think ad revenue is a fraction of your overall revenue when it comes to Twitch compared to subs and sponsorships and stuff like that. But on YouTube side, I think the ad side is much more compelling. Still, I think you get more from sponsorships and things like that. But, you know, looking at the difference between the platforms, ad targeting could help push Twitch to be more like YouTube in terms of what creators can get from ads. If they're more effective and advertisers know that their ads are going to be hitting people that are more receptive to their products. So I think, again, it's actually a good thing. And there was an overreaction for this. We just have to see more official communication on Twitch's side of what it's like and how you can play around it and learn to use it to your advantage, assuming they actually roll it out. So I hope they push it out, but we'll kind of have to wait to see what they do there.
I mean, there's so many problems, isn't there, with the ad platform on Twitch. You could spend a whole hour talking about it, but one of the big ones is the split that like Twitch takes compared to you. And like you said, it's such a minimal amount of even full-time streamers' income is ads that run on your channel. So any improvement that they can do there, whether that's being able to specify more directly what advertisers should advertise on your content through some kind of like brand safety score, probably will help improve that number of how much money you can make through ads. But I think the difficulty from a streamer's point of view is it's another metric, isn't it? Like you could be working really hard to grow your stream and all the graphs are going in the right direction, but then you have that kind of anxiety hanging over you that if you do one thing wrong, you know, like if somebody, I don't know, donates money and includes a link that ends up showing something that you don't want to show on stream, that could completely ruin your brand safety score, and then, you know, your whole Twitch career could be over. So it's just it's kind of similar to the strike system. It's an extra thing to be anxious about while streaming, and you know, having this like rating can definitely make you feel a little bit anxious about the whole thing, and you know, if you make any kind of mistakes. But I think yeah, it's like we've said, it's something that Twitch probably was always going to implement, and just maybe the fact that it was found like through code and the wording of some of the phrases in the code about like reviews and ratings and things like that made people probably backlash a little bit. But you know, people are very quick to backlash against Twitch now because they're such a big platform and they've made many bad decisions, but I don't necessarily think that this is one of them.
Yeah, I think, again, like you said, the intention is right. It just wasn't an official release. And it was kind of leaked and then, you know, fuel on the fire from Twitter for this kind of thing. So, but I agree with you. And you bring up a good point on the fact that it is live on Twitch. So you can't, you know, on YouTube, you have control over everything that goes out. So you have much more brand control in that sense versus Twitch. You could have someone donate something or do something live in voice chat or things that you don't have as much control over. And so maybe you do have more anxiety around that brand score. So that's a good point. I think we'll kind of have to wait to see how they release it. But overall, could be a really good win if they do it in a good way and that creators feel like they have control over the brand score and it's not just something that's set against them.
Yeah, I think this probably segues quite nicely into talking about a new platform and a platform that isn't necessarily plagued with being big before they've made these decisions. So a couple of weeks ago, I feel like it wasn't last week, but maybe the week before, we talked about Glimish, which is a new streaming platform that sort of had their launch, I think, on the day that we recorded the episode. So we couldn't actually see the launch, but we talked then about what we thought the platform might be capable of, and definitely that we would discuss the launch after the fact. So we're now past that date. Glimish.tv has launched. They had their sort of alpha. I think they're probably still in that alpha or early beta, but they've certainly opened up the platform so people can stream there. Have you checked it out? Did you watch any of the launch event? Have you read their article sort of on the postmortem, like I said, of their launch?
Yeah, I just saw the postmortem article this morning. So I have not watched a lot of Glimish since the launch. I checked it out initially on the day that it came out. And there was a little bit of initial excitement. If you look at some of the data they have here, and we'll link this in the show notes for you audio listeners, there was a spike to about, I think, 30K visitors in a day was kind of their peak around launch for the alpha. And it slowly kind of trailed off after that. Honestly, I haven't seen a whole lot of discussion around Glamish, so I think it's still got a long ways to go until it kind of gets into the public eye and public mind. But it seems like they're doing okay. It's definitely a very small platform still. Like, browsing around streams, the most people I see in a stream is like 5 to 8 maybe. So very small in that sense compared to Twitch and YouTube. But I mean, I like how they're being pretty transparent with everything they're doing. It's a pretty lengthy blog post on everything from their finances to their growth on social media and just general awareness for the site and kind of the roadmap for the next things they're launching. So I can respect that. The fact that they're really making it very interactive and letting users kind of influence what comes next and the slow progress. That piece is cool, but they've got a long way to go, like I said, to get into that competitive side with Twitch and YouTube, in my opinion. Did you have thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, if we if I visit the website right now, there are 22 live streams on the whole platform in the gaming category anyway. So we're talking about a really, really small platform. And when you said that they like peaked at 30,000 visitors to their website, like some days gamingcareers.com peaks at 30,000 visitors. So it's certainly not a big website, and really even you can't really put them in the same conversation as these other live streaming platforms. I think probably my point of view is the best thing that can come out of something like Glamish TV, and maybe this is pessimistic, is that it gains enough traction to force Twitch into making some good changes, because it's not even close in comparison to a proper platform yet. And maybe they'll get there and be able to keep working on it, but typically how these new platforms go is they eventually run out of money or run out of steam, because it's a very expensive and difficult thing to do when you start to scale. So it's worth keeping track on. And like you said, this like post-mortem that they do is really, really detailed. But like the very first table that you get about their growth, surely that should be all about how many people are streaming and how many people are watching on the platform. But instead they dive into like how much their Discord has grown, how much their Twitter has grown, how much their Reddit has grown. And like, that doesn't matter. Like, nobody who's streaming to the platform cares about how big that platform's Twitter account is. Like, it should be straight into the data about how many people are streaming. It does eventually get there, but yeah, it just seems to me that they're trying to like brag about how much they've grown when really people don't care about how big their Discord server is. So yeah, definitely worth keeping track on. I think I've got a pessimistic view because of how many of these platforms I've seen fail, but I'll certainly keep track of it. I guess that's the only positive that I can give to this.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with you on the pessimistic side, because I mean, if Microsoft couldn't do it with Mixer, then it's going to be hard for a startup to do that at a fraction of Mixer's level, essentially. I don't know. We'll keep an eye on it. Like you said, maybe they have some new features that can compete with Twitch and YouTube or give them some inspiration even. It seems like they're pretty focused on the streamer side with Glamish, and they talk about they had a lot of, I think, 6,000 streams and about 2,800 unique streamers during launch week, which I guess is okay. But again, they don't talk about viewership at all or total unique viewers or anything. So I guess they're really trying to appeal to people to come stream to there first and then hope that viewers will follow, which didn't work super well for Mixer. Hopefully it'll work better for them. And in any case, we'll keep an eye on it, because I think it's cool to see, again, all the transparency is very cool. They talk about the server costs and like gross platform revenue and how they're kind of dealing with that. So best of luck to them. Hopefully they'll keep growing and we can keep an eye on that. We also had something that I thought was super interesting. So have you ever seen Ludwig stream? I think he's growing really fast. So I'm sure most people here have at least heard of Ludwig, but he's doing something super interesting this week on Twitch.
Yeah, we've mentioned him a couple of times, I think, on the podcast, especially when he bid $50,000 to get an hour of gaming with Shroud. He's a very entertaining creator who's seen incredible growth, I'd say, over the last couple of years on Twitch. Like, he's one of the top 1% or top 0.1% now of the platform, for sure. And isn't it frustrating when all the advice that channels like Gaming Careers give out about creating quality content is how you're going to grow, and then Ludwig is in the middle of a like 3-day stream or something now, where he's put his bed in the camera frame and he sleeps for 6 of the hours each day, and he still manages to hold 25,000 viewers, and he has 44,000 subscribers now. Like, God, that is quality content, isn't it? No, I'm jesting a little bit, because basically what he's doing is running a never-ending stream, or there's certainly meant to be an end, but essentially he is streaming for as long as people are supporting him. So every time a subscriber or a viewer subscribes to his stream, he extends the amount of time that he's streaming for by 10 seconds. I think this was originally 20 seconds and they brought it down to 10 seconds because it was just becoming so ridiculous. So every time somebody subscribes, the length of time that he'll be streaming for on this one stream extends by 10 seconds. So when you're a popular streamer, you probably know, okay, this is going to be at least 24 hours. What happened on the first night is I think he went to bed with 24 hours still to go and he woke up 6 hours later with 27 hours still to go. So like you can see that he's kind of positioned the stream as a way of, you know, encouraging his viewers to subscribe. He's obviously making a lot of money throughout this time. But it's also getting to the point now where he's like, when is this ever going to end? Like the countdown timer just keeps going up with every subscriber that subscribes. So I wouldn't say it's quality content, but it's innovative and it's like entertaining to watch him wake up. Or like the bits that keep getting clipped are him seeing, like waking up in the middle of the night, looking at his screen and seeing that it's now gone up by 3 hours, even though he's had 4 or 5 hours passed since he went to bed.
Yeah, I think I wanted to talk about this because it's such a unique idea. I think we've seen people do this kind of thing before. 24-hour streams are no new type of thing. And we've seen people extend stream durations by whatever, if we have subs and bits, which is what he's doing. But he's now 2 days into it. And I think, to my knowledge, it's the first time that they've incorporated like sleeping streams into this as well. I think he's sleeping at the time of this podcast recording. He's sleeping right now on stream. And the timer's still at 26 hours. So it's not really gone down since he started. And if that continues, it's just kind of interesting to see how long this will go. If he'll just sleep like a full week on stream and keep doing that kind of thing. Super interesting and super unique, and I think that's why it's so interesting to watch on Twitch's side, and I think everyone kind of keeps coming back to see, is he still streaming, is it still happening? So we'll keep an eye. Maybe by the time we record next week's podcast, he'll still be streaming. We don't really know, because it just keeps going up. But yeah, I think it's just a super cool idea of a new way to do content if you want to take something people have done before and add your own twist to it. Now, obviously, not everyone can do a never-ending stream on Twitch because of life circumstances, and so I think that's kind of why it's cool to watch this, but it just kind of proves there's always something new you can do on Twitch, and I'm curious to see what happens next in the streaming world.
He has thought about this as well. It's not just watching him stream with like chat on the side. He's got mates of his to be like in Discord, kind of talking with chat, and he has the donation thing where you can play a video if you donate for a certain amount of time. So like he's reacting to a lot of content. I can understand that people that have never heard of him and are listening to us describe, it sounds like an absolute money grab, but he has clearly thought about the content side behind it and the fact that it's quite innovative. But like you said, who knows where we're going to be? Like, when will this end? He can't let it go over a month because then people will be able to use their their Prime subscription again.
That's
so
true.
It'll just be ongoing forever. And I kind of worry for his physical health. I hope he does a few like workouts or something on stream and actually manages to go outside. Maybe takes an IRL camera out with him. But it's definitely worth covering because it's kind of the talk. I've been like opening up the stream when I wake up to see if he's still going and what the time is at. So it certainly captivated me to some extent, but I don't think I'd be watching it all day. But yeah, it's definitely something worth covering. Whilst we're on the topic of streaming on Twitch, we saw a podcast. So Trainwrex, another popular Twitch streamer, runs a podcast every week called The Scuff Podcast, where he gets like 10 plus guests on each week. Again, big personality streamers, and they cover various different topics. Personally, I would never want to try and manage 10 different people on a podcast, but he does a really good job. And this week there was a certain highlight that I think we wanted to discuss, where he had on both Valkyrie and Courage, who are two of probably the bigger streamers on YouTube, biggest streamers on YouTube. I think Valkyrie won breakout streamer or best streamer of the year or something like that last year. So she certainly had a great year, as has Courage on YouTube last year. But they kind of discussed what gripes they had with the platform.
Yeah, this is super interesting because I think when you think of YouTube streamers, well, Valkyrie and Courage are both signed by YouTube specifically. So, you know, there are a lot of big YouTube streamers, Doc and a lot of the organic YouTube side, of course, for gaming, but these two are specifically chosen to come over to YouTube from Twitch. So it's pretty interesting. But Valkyrie was talking about the difference between specifically chat culture for Twitch and YouTube, but then also some other pieces of the platform on YouTube. Basically, the quote was from her: "We have no chat culture on YouTube, no hosting, we hardly have a directory." And then she said, "I don't even know who streams on YouTube, I can't find anyone to watch." So it was super interesting that, you know, she is this signed YouTube streamer who's kind of a flagship streamer for the platform and is talking about some of these platform issues that YouTube has. Now, she kind of gave a caveat that they are working on these and they'll be fixed soon, but I think some of the big issues from her side are the fact that the emotes, especially on YouTube, are really far behind because you can only use them in one channel and there's no BTTV or that kind of thing to add your own emotes. And just less of a chat culture in general, it seems like, compared to Twitch, which definitely has a very specific culture to it, if you guys are familiar with Twitch. So just super interesting on my side to kind of see the difference from a YouTube streamer's opinion. And I think that even surprised a lot of Twitch streamers as well, who didn't know things like that. And now I think YouTube will probably catch up on these things because they are platform issues compared to, you know, just entire site-wide issues on discoverability, things like that. But kind of cool to hear their side. What did you think of that, Pete?
One thing, I think it's great to hear somebody who streams daily on this platform complain about some of the issues, because quite often what you're going to get is, especially since she signed a contract with them, is that they would just be looking at it through rose-tinted glasses and, or, you know, have that bias regret where you just, you refuse to acknowledge some of the problems that the platform has. So it's good to hear that the things that we complain about with YouTube, the chat experience, the lack of like having a central directory of live streamers, like it's actually quite hard to find out who is live streaming unless you subscribe to the channel already. So it was interesting to hear her talk about that. One thing that she pointed out, yeah, the better Twitch TV or Frankerface, emote systems, like they don't have any of that integrated, and the fact that you can't use emotes, like you said, on different channels. So she really highlighted the point that the chat experience is incredible on Twitch, and I think a few of the other streamers echoed the fact that the chat often carries the streamer on Twitch, and she feels like that's really lacking on YouTube, that culture. So whether that's something that YouTube can just build with features, or if it's something, you know, a little bit more unique that is going to take a bit of time, more streamers streaming on YouTube to build up, you know, that almost meta of Twitch chat, I feel like there is.
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen this, but when I'm on YouTube, it seems like there's a lot of borrowed chat culture from Twitch. People still using emotes from Twitch and just typing them out, even if they can't use the actual emote on the YouTube side, because they've kind of transcended Twitch too. I saw this even on Mixer too. People typing like PogChamp and Kappa and things like that, even though it wasn't actual an emote on that platform, which is interesting. So I think it would take some time for YouTube to build up their own kind of culture of emotes, and maybe they just take influence from Twitch and develop their own style. But it really is an underrated part of Twitch. I think that's part of why people do get so attached to Twitch, because you got a very strong culture, and specifically around streaming, because YouTube does have all the VOD side of it too, so it doesn't really have the same kind of community culture around live streaming so much as the entire YouTube platform, I think. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do, actually. I think basically what it comes down to is YouTube has built some really great features that Twitch doesn't have, things like pause and rewind and the ability to stream at crazy bit rates and resolutions and things like that. But the harder thing for them to implement is what Twitch has sort of built up over the last 10 years, which is that like culture, that feeling of like a place. Like if you discover a new channel on Twitch, you can go in there and quite quickly use these like global emotes or emotes from other channels and fit in, really. Whereas YouTube, like you say, you can't use emotes from different channels, and it feels a little bit more borrowed from Twitch. So it'll be interesting to see what YouTube, I wish there was like a roadmap. That's all I want to see from like the engineer's perspective. I want to see what features are YouTube working on in the next month, 3 months, 6 months, year. Like that's the dream. Obviously they don't share that kind of stuff because they don't want to give the competitors that info, but we talk often on this podcast about the benefits of YouTube over Twitch, and it's worth definitely pointing out the benefits of Twitch over YouTube, and hearing it from big streamers on YouTube, I think, was really interesting. So again, if you have some time, check out the video or the highlight that we'll post in the show notes or in the YouTube descriptions if you're watching the video version. What do you want to get to next? I guess this cool Twitch Atlas feature that you found over on the subreddit.
Yeah, so I'll talk about this really quickly. Again, for you audio listeners, I would highly encourage you to check out the show notes, because the visual of this is super important to realize what we're talking about. Basically, someone built a tool which kind of groups most of the big communities, like probably top 500 to probably way more than that, actually, probably thousands of different channels as little circles on a chart, sort of like think of like a universe. You're looking at kind of a solar system, and it's grouping all these different types of categories of channels together, whether they've seen this same type of game or like the Spanish speaking streamers in one category. and creates this whole nebula of how they all connect to each other. And so you can see like XQC is a big circle, and then you've got a bunch of other small streamers around him that are kind of the same area or type of streams that he does. And just really interesting to see a visualization sort of the culture and the different networks on Twitch in a graph, essentially. So check out the picture if you haven't had a chance to yet. Super interesting just to look at the different kind of, it's almost like thinking of like the school lunch tables almost when you're at school and you have the different groups of streamers. So you've got like the jocks and the nerds and whatever. So it's kind of like that in a visual sense. I don't know. Did you take a look at this, Pete?
Essentially, what you're seeing here is the shared viewership. So if somebody watches XQC's channel, they're also very likely to watch these other streamers that are very close in this picture to XQC. And you can sort of see that, yeah, like you said, definitely languages are quite separate. So you can see like the Russian streamers are all in a separate section and they're not that close to any other streamers. But you also see like in the English speaking streamers, different games. So like the CS players sometimes overlap with the Overwatch streamers, you know, because they're both FPS games. And then you have like the chess category. Like you can really identify people that have been streaming a lot of chess, but then they overlap with other streamers where they've done different content. So I don't know what you can really take out of this data rather than just being like a data nerd and enjoying seeing like, oh, right, like Pokimane is kind of actually quite close to Sykuno and Ludwig, and they all sort of sit in the same group. And then you on the other side, you've got like LOL Tyler One, who sits with all the other League of Legends streamers because he doesn't really stream anything else. And it's just interesting, I think, to see the data. It's really hard to get across like we've tried on a podcast, but you can sort of just browse around this massive image and see these different, I guess, categories of streamers and where the audiences overlap. And yeah, I mean, it's great for educating ourselves. We talked earlier this year about the GrefG having like the breakout 2 million concurrent viewers. And he's kind of a streamer that nobody from the English speaking side had that much of an idea about. But you can see this whole like Spanish speaking side of Twitch and all these big names that we don't really talk about that often and how they compare to the big names in the English speaking side. So it's definitely good for educating ourselves. We often just talk about the English speaking side, but there's massive other languages, Brazilian streamers, Spanish, Russians streamers. And then within that, you can go into the different games of Minecraft, CSGO and all those kind of things. So it's well worth having a little play around on your next lunch break and seeing where these top, 1,000 probably streamers sit and how their communities interact. Because one thing we've talked a lot about with Twitch is that people often don't go from one stream to another when they don't know the other streamer. But you can see here how similar different audiences are at a glance, really, and where audiences share viewership between different channels.
Yeah, I think it shows you a lot of the connection, like you said, between those channels. It's cool to see sort of the overlap for some areas too that you might not expect. Like I think the League and so League of Legends and CSGO communities are pretty close, which is interesting, and kind of the Fortnite merged in there. And so it makes you think about different groups of viewers, but then also breakout communities too. Like you said, the Spanish streamers are kind of their own separate area, but they're a huge separate area. So you can see there might be some areas on Twitch you're not super familiar with that actually have pretty big followings that are probably going to start merging with a bigger Twitch following soon. So I think it's pretty cool. And the guide does update it every once in a while. This is volume 2. There was a volume 1, so there might be a volume 3. And we'll kind of have to keep tabs on how this changes over time and whether these, you know, sub communities get bigger and dwarf XQC and the big conglomerate in the middle, or what happens there. But just super interesting to follow that piece.
Yeah, it'd be cool if they if there was a way just to generate the report yourself. I know it'd be probably computationally quite expensive, but especially when we see like a breakout streamer, somebody that goes from nobody to 10,000 concurrents in the space of just a few months, it'd be cool to see how they, like where they've come from in this graph, like which communities they overlap with the most and where that graph changes over time. But yeah, we're just going to have to stick with whenever he updates the Atlas, as he's calling it. The last piece of news I think we get to before the viewer question is just some, but I guess, negative news around YouTube and the way that they are dealing with taxes. So this, this only impacts people outside of the US who are creating content on YouTube, where earnings could be reduced by up to 24%, especially if you don't submit any tax info. So this applies to me, funnily enough, being based in the UK. Basically, YouTube now wants me to submit some additional tax information to make sure that they are collecting the right amount of taxes or deducting the right amount of taxes, if any need to be deducted. Now, thankfully for me in the UK and the US have like a tax treaty where essentially you only get taxed once, depending on where your business is and what platform you're creating content on or anything like that. So it shouldn't impact me yet to find out, but we'll do find out shortly. But there are certainly some countries that don't have that benefit. So yeah, it's going to reduce, at the end of the day, it's just going to reduce earnings for a lot of creators. Since YouTube is an American website, they have to collect taxes for money that is earned through US viewers as well. So this is definitely going to impact a lot of UK and European and any other country other than the US creators who are, I guess, earning money from US viewers is how it boils down to. What did you think of this? Like, I know you're based in the US, so it doesn't really impact you too much, but did this come up on your Twitter feed at all, or was it just more as Europeans?
Yeah, I actually didn't see this until you mentioned it, I guess because I'm in the US bubble, so I just wasn't exposed to this as much. Did you see anyone who has directly impacted it? Because I know you weren't actually being in the UK, which is nice, but did you have any other creators who saw this actually make a dent in revenue or anything?
Well, it's still too early to know how much they're going to withhold for people. So all you're doing at this stage is submitting tax information, and then YouTube is going to work out and calculate how much they need to withhold from your earnings. So it's more what I saw was the call out for, this is biased towards US creators and the fact that YouTube is a global company and, they pay out in various different countries. So like, I don't get paid by Google America, I get paid by Google Ireland. So it's a lot of complaints basically about it being a reduced income for a lot of creators. But we're yet to see really what the impact is going to be. Like I said, hopefully I'm not impacted, but there are certainly a lot of countries, there are creators in Australia that maybe don't have the exact same beneficiaries or agreements with the US government and their local government. So at the end of the day, it's going to be less money for a lot of creators. So it is a negative thing. But as these platforms like YouTube and Twitch get bigger, the scrutiny around taxes probably gets much closer. So this is probably something that has needed to happen for a while, and YouTube is finally having to clamp down on earnings.
Yeah, I think we'll probably see more and more restrictions around that, not just for YouTube, but also for Twitch and TikTok and any other sort of social media sites that are providing a lot of revenue for creators. As it becomes more understood, I think, by governments and regulations, we'll see more of that control probably. So it's probably just growing pains of YouTube. And as usual, YouTube tends to kind of pave the way for other platforms. So we might see Twitch do the same thing a couple months or a couple years from now, given the DMCA track record. But we'll have to keep an eye on that for sure.
Yeah, I think there's definitely going to be a call for like more financial advice for businesses based in different countries, even because that is essentially what we are now, right? Where you have to treat it as a business, especially when you start to go part-time or even full-time, you need to start thinking about tax positions and making sure that you're covering everything from a legal standpoint. But it's a boring topic, isn't it? So let's move on to the viewer question. We've got another question from Keto Cubus, who didn't complain about his name pronunciation. So we must have got it right in the previous episode when he asked the question. But another good question from him. He said, do you think it would be wise at this point for Twitch to implement some YouTube-like searchability? And I think really what he means by this is like the discoverability that you have on YouTube. He said, I personally kind of enjoy the fact that Twitch has no algorithm to figure out / break. So I'll throw that over to you to start. Why don't you start by tackling this discoverability issue on Twitch?
Yeah, so discoverability in general could definitely be improved on Twitch. I think that's pretty universally agreed. And they have made efforts to try and make it better with the front page giving certain recommendations and offering new filter options when you're in a directory. But I personally would really like to see some more things tried on Twitch's side. If that's things like, they have tags on streams, but I don't think they're used that much at all right now. So like a search feature that's more powerful. Now, it is tougher to try to position your content on Twitch around certain search terms or tags because it's live and not, a curated piece of content on YouTube. But I think that if Twitch added options to tag your content a certain way, or, if titles are more important, things like that, then people would start adapting on their content, maybe plan more content around a specific topic or theme. And that coupled with, maybe Twitch trying to add more VOD support and prominence on their platform could be helpful too. In general, I think if they try to just improve the search with more tagging options and some sort of metadata around that, I would be all for it. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that, Pete?
I hate agreeing with you on literally every point. Like, we need to have more points that we disagree on. But yeah, I do. I totally agree. The difficult thing, I think a lot of people say, like, discoverability is possible on YouTube and TikTok. Why can't Twitch implement that? And the biggest reason is because they don't know the topic that you're streaming about. All they know is probably the game, and they could probably use some data like the Twitch Atlas where they can see viewers that have enjoyed your content and enjoyed other people's content and try and recommend more people that enjoyed that other person's content to watch your content. But they don't have the ability like YouTube do on a video to know exactly what topic you're covering and then to recommend that video to people that have been searching similar topics. So it is definitely a more difficult problem for Twitch to solve than platforms like TikTok or YouTube that are serving VOD content where they can actually start to understand the topic of the video. Well, at least until they'd start doing some like AI transcribing of your your Twitch stream to understand what topic you're talking about. But it is a more difficult problem. I think they definitely need to implement more features on discoverability. We saw the whole boost this streamer option, and we talked about that, I think, towards the tail end of last year, where communities can start to spend channel points to hopefully boost the streamer that they're watching onto the front page. And so Twitch is definitely aware of this as an issue. But I guess the other side of things is a lot of people think of the YouTube algorithm as a negative. And I think that's probably on us content creators complaining about not getting picked up by the YouTube algorithm on certain videos. But really, the algorithm is like the best thing in the world. It's how any of us YouTube content creators became successful, is because our videos got recommended to people. And we can't then complain about our videos not being recommended to people. Like, at the end of the day, all the algorithm is doing is trying to match people that are on the platform with content that they want to watch, and it's taking data from click-through rate and retention and how long people are watching videos for to serve that content. And at the end of the day, if you create really great content that has good click-through rate and people stay and watch the whole video and stay on the platform, then that's what YouTube wants to promote. So you just have to serve that, you have to serve the algorithm in that way. But really, it's just about creating the best content you can. The annoying thing is like making sure you nail the thumbnail and the title so that people actually click through. But if you get the content right, then you've got at least 50% of the way there. So I don't necessarily think of the algorithm as a bad thing, because at the end of the day, that's probably what has made a lot of YouTubers into full-time content creators, is this algorithm. And it's certainly going to be the reason why you, as a small creator or somebody with zero subscribers, is able to create any kind of traction, is because of the algorithm. Because if it didn't exist, then you have the exact same problem that Twitch has, where you're just a zero viewer streamer with no way for anyone to ever discover you.
Exactly. Yeah, I think the algorithm, as someone who does a lot more Twitch streaming than YouTube creating, I'm very envious of the YouTube algorithm. I wish we had something like that on Twitch, because on YouTube, as a starting YouTuber, you can build a video around a specific topic for the algorithm. On search especially, you can find a keyword and plan your content around those keywords. On Twitch, you can't really do that in any way. The best you can do is try to make your stream very entertaining, but you're still kind of just hopeful that Twitch will show your stream on the front page, maybe, or that people will find your stuff in a good directory. That's about the best you can do if you want to start growing. So I really wish we would see things more like tagging. For example, I know it's tougher for Twitch because they are just in the game area. So primarily in the gaming area. So you don't have the benefit of having like beauty content and so much diverse content on YouTube. So it's hard to niche down, I think, on Twitch compared to YouTube. But even doing things like, you know, adding things for what you play in a certain game, like certain characters, take League of Legends and Valorant and CSGO, and just add some tags around specific things in that game, and then maybe recommend content for streamers who, you know, play similar champions that you've been watching, or certain types of game modes for a game that you like, and then kind of talk about what that is and let people tag their stuff that way. I think that could lead to a lot more discoverability and cross promotion on Twitch. So I would love to see something like that added to Twitch in the future, because it just feels like, again, if you're starting out, it's so tough to build specific content around an idea that gets seen on Twitch compared to YouTube.
Yeah, totally agree. But we're gonna have to in future podcasts make sure that we have opposing arguments so that we can really cover all the angles. Maybe we made a mistake of being too similar in personality. But yeah, I think that probably does it for this week. Thanks again for watching and for listening. All the comments that we've had on YouTube and personal Twitter and Instagram and things like that have been super positive about this podcast. So thank you so much for keeping that up. Again, as always, if you have a viewer question, send it in through YouTube comments or tag either of us on Twitter or Instagram. We screenshot them and then we go through them each week and choose one for the video or for the podcast rather. And we're also kind of, I guess, discussing the possibility of live streaming this podcast. So we'd love to get your thoughts on that. I think the biggest hurdle for us is trying to work out a time that's going to work for both of us. And in the midst of your time zone changing and my time zone about to change, just trying to work out a time that would work for both of us as well as for a lot of the audience that listen to this podcast. So yeah, if you'd be interested in watching this live and then we can start to get viewer questions live. Can you imagine that, Ben? That would be incredible. But yeah, that'll do it for this week. Thanks again so much for watching or for listening and hope you have a good week streaming and we will catch you next week. Peace.
See ya.